Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Real World Entrepreneurial Podcast. My name's Alan Clark.
And I'm Byron Patel.
So this week we're joined by Hugh Evans, or as I will refer to him throughout, Moose. And the reason why will become abundantly obvious as soon as he starts chatting. But before that, Byron, what's been going on in your real world this week?
So I am more and more speaking to people back in the UK, realizing how depressed you are. I mean, it's quite fantastically depressed. So I, for everyone who knows me or knows this podcast, as I am now ensconced myself into Croatia, simply because the sun is shining and people are acting like normal human beings. And every time I look back in the UK, I realize what the hell is going on. Like, you say the US elections is fucked up, right? But actually, really. Every time I speak to people in the UK, you're all a little bit more depressed than you were the last time I spoke to you. So come on, guys. What happened to the positivity there? I mean, okay, from a business perspective, again, it really is just, it's weird. I mean, coming out here and doing the digital, well, you say digital nomad, being the virtual CTO, really gives you a new perspective on not, I wouldn't say just business, but it gives you a perspective on how people are feeling back in the UK. And what I find quite interesting and strange is that everyone has seemed to have mollified themselves, right? You've all become now sheep, and it's right. I feel that, like, you look at the rest of the world exists out there, and now everyone has basically taken a bit of soma and is relaxing and giving up.
Do you think that's how the rest of the world looks at us, or is that kind of just a perspective that you've got now that you've broken free and learned from the outside in?
I think that I don't think the rest of the world cares, honestly, about what goes on in the UK, and generally, I don't think most of the world cares about what goes on in the US. I just don't think anyone really cares. I think the thing is that we seem to beat ourselves up as British folk, and the fact that we. So I'll give you another great example is that I'm working with the NHS at the moment, right? And so we're doing NHS login. So imagine that you have a login to the NHS to find your GP records or whatever it is, right? NHS login in the UK will not work in Scotland, Northern Ireland, or Wales. Legally, they're not allowed to provide you with that service. So you're only allowed to use that service in England. So right. When I'm having conversations with the NHS at the moment, I'm thinking, I keep saying UK, but I can't say UK. I can't say Britain. I have to say England. And this is the most insane thing, is that we've now gone, and having lived 20 years abroad, coming back to what I thought was the UK, it ain't the UK anymore, right? And everything is now, and again, living abroad, coming back, oh, sorry, not living abroad, but just coming out again and coming back in. Damn.
Well, I think that's really evident in the response to COVID and our 145,000 different versions of lockdown that are on the go right now and trying to work out what's going on. But on a more upbeat note, but it's rather interesting to have a view from the outside looking in and inside looking out. I had a really brilliant experience, a brilliant moment during the week, which was as the world woke up to absolute carnage in the US. One of the companies I work with now is a startup down in Kilmarnock who are using social media and frankly digital means to much more effectively and efficiently recruit participants for market research. And they woke up on the morning after the carnage to an email from one of the companies I've worked in was in New York City, asking them to urgently go and recruit a panel of respondents across the US to allow them to take a quick litmus test of the state of that nation in that moment after the events of the night before.
How do they find him, though? How do they find that company?
Well, in fairness, they had already done some work in the past as a startup, and they found them because basically the managing director and the founder, Scott, had done some work on LinkedIn that had then got some visibility and shares around the community of creative market researchers. So there was already a connection there. But when they woke up in New York City thinking, we need help right now because of what's going on, imagine the scale of the industry in the US, the scale of the industry in New York City, But that chap thought, no, do you know what it is? It's that small startup business in Scotland, in a place I've never heard of called Kilmarnock, that I need to phone to get this done. And that just gave me absolute enthusiasm that in this world of startups and entrepreneurship, see if you have got a good idea, see if you can deliver a good product or service, do you know what? Amazing things can happen, often that you don't ever have as part of your strategic plan, but there are opportunities that come along. So if you were looking back at the UK feeling on a bit of a downer about it, I actually had a really nice warm little glow during the week that actually there's some people doing great stuff.
And to be fair, I have been to the Wetherspoons in Kilmarnock, and it was a positive experience when I was there last there many, many years ago. But we have a guest. So hello, Moose. And I'm sure we'll get into the, why you're called Moose. But so let's start with full disclosure, because I think we should always be transparent to our listeners. Alan and Moose have worked together for many years now. And for those of you who've listened to the podcast over the last, I don't know, 2 months that we've been doing it, you'll have known that Alan was the pioneer of rock radio in Scotland. What I want to know, though, Moose, is when you started with Alan, and back in the day when you were there, because you were there from the early days, am I correct?
Yes.
Right. Why was rock radio so revolutionary? Because when you look at it now, it makes sense, right? I mean, it's simple. But why was it such a revolutionary thing back then?
Well, the thing is, it wasn't really revolutionary at all. It's just that nobody attempted it because the way that the model is constructed, the commercial model is constructed, it's not going to work. And so other people looked at that and went, well, nope, it's too niche.
What is the commercial model?
Well, the commercial model is commercials, selling advertising. Everything is done and fueled by advertising. I'm already going off on tangents, but if you ever ask any panel of people who are asked to research radio, you know, what do you not like? Two things they come back and they say, commercials is always number one. I hate the ads. I don't want any ads. That's what I hate the most about radio. And the second is the limited playlists. I'd like to hear more music. I'd like to hear different artists. And those are consistently, every single panel I've ever been associated with, those are the top two, always. Yes, you think about radio, you think about commercial radio.
Yeah.
So let's say you have a business of 50 people, for argument's sake. About 80% of the resources that station has spends on trying to attract advertising, the number one thing that listeners don't want. That's what they do. Their whole model is based on going out and getting something that their listeners do not want. That's because that's how they fund themselves, with advertising. That's how crazy that is. But that's what they do. And the manpower, the money, the effort is all spent on getting listeners so we can get advertisers, and then we can sell to those advertisers. So basically we're selling your attention. That's what that model is.
All right.
And so in order for that to work, you need big numbers. You need a lot of people to make those ads worth something. If you go into niche markets like rock, particularly on an FM transmission when we started, there's just not enough rock fans to make that sustainable. There's not enough people listening. You can't get enough people to listen to that station to sell ads, or your ads are not worth enough to make that model work. It's simple mathematics. It will not work.
All right. So in order to kind of break away from the past to the future, because I know obviously you're doing something very different from what Alan and you guys did in the past. So one question is, what did Team Rock make different? And with Primordial Radio, what are you doing differently from Team Rock?
Wow. That's there's a question. Team Rock it failed because it tore itself apart from within. And there were so many different factions to it, and every single person had an idea of what it should be. There was no real clarity. The CEO had a very clear vision in his head, but I don't know if he managed to impress that upon every single person. This is exactly what this is going to be. This is how we're going to get here step by step. This is what it's going to look like. So I had my very definite view as to how it was going to work and how it should work. The editorial staff had a very different idea. That, I mean, every single department had a very clear vision and very clear as to how they think it should work. And none of them were the same. It just ripped itself apart from within. And there was no way we were going to win that fight when we were fighting ourselves. I mean, you can't win a fight when you're fighting yourselves. It's but just ridiculous.
It kind of then sounds like it was a little bit like the old early days of technology, right? Where you had lots of very great minds,
yeah,
all trying to fulfill a goal, but all wanting to achieve that goal in different ways, right?
Exactly. But you said it bang on. We had an incredibly talented team. Oh my God, we had talent. We had expertise. We had experience. We had money. We had all the things that you would think. Wow, if I'm making a successful cocktail, I've got all the ingredients here, but somehow we made the shittiest martini in the world.
So what are you doing now differently? What's new with Primordial Radio?
Well, we're now just focused on one vision. That's it, as opposed to 20, 25. And I'm not exaggerating. I'm sure Alan can, unless you disagree vehemently, Alan.
No.
Everybody had a very, so we started with a very clear vision, and everybody basically subscribes to that idea. I don't know how in depth you want it to be, but that's it. Every person is pulling in the same direction towards the same goal, and it just transforms the whole business. I mean, honestly, my job is so easy; it's incredible.
So I mean,
if I could maybe just interject for a second, the three-stage process that I see to where Primordial is now, we're missing the guys are. Back when I first met Moose, it was Moose was watching in, and I was watching as a supplier too, Garden Media Group's radio division. And that is exactly as Moose said, the entire business was based on selling advertising.
That was your background though, right? I mean, you came from the background of advertising.
Oh God, yeah. I spent 10 an entire decade of my life trying to make that model work.
So how did you rethink your priorities? I mean, like, yeah, Alan, you were MD of an advertising company. So how do you...
Let me explain how that came about, because the big idea is exactly what misidentified here, which is when you've got a niche audience, you don't want to be, or that niche audience doesn't want to be inundated with irrelevant advertising messages as it tries to deep dive into the content. And when you're actually already a committed fan, you want more than just the top 40, whatever the top 40 is in that area. You want to learn new things. You want to, you know, you're really into a sector here. And that was at the core of the Team Rock idea. Where Team Rock went wrong was we had a really clear strategy at launch, but when the business started running, that strategy stopped being aligned. And as Moose identified, different parts and different views of what their outcome was going to mean. And they were not aligned. And I just don't want to even get into how that came about and how it delivered. But the really smart thing that the guys have done as I stand on outside and look, they've got exactly the same idea as Team Rock had, but they're keeping it simple, and everybody buys into the same strategic ambition, and they're creating a business that they can actually run as one coordinated group.
All right, so I think this is now, I hope you don't mind, and I hope the listeners don't mind, I'm going to turn this into a dual interview. I'm going to interview both you, Alan, and you, Moose, because I think this is very, very interesting, because everything that you're talking about now talks to most people trying to run a business. Essentially, right? Because you've gone from great people who are intelligent trying to do something great for the audience that you feel that you can serve, and five of you have five different ideas on how to serve them, and then it becomes a competition within to figure out who can shout the loudest and who can actually be the one who comes on top. And then you've kind of, that starburst has happened, and you've sprinkled out into your own individual ways of being and interpreting the vision that you had initially, if that's the correct way of putting it. I don't know.
Makes sense to me.
So then there's two questions I have around that, and one is around organization of a business. If we're talking about from the Real World Entrepreneur podcast aspect, there's one way of organizing a business, but then there's another way of actually looking at your core set of who you're trying to translate to. So I'm going to ask two questions and you've got to decide on who wants to answer each question, right? From having learned what you've learned through the things that you've done, and obviously it failing and not failing, but, you know,
It failed. Incredibly. Spectacular right. Fail. Public. Right. Public, spectacular.
So it failing in a big way, right? And from you getting to where you are now, I understand that obviously focus is a key, but that cannot be the only key. So there must have been other things that you have done in order to cement the business in a way that you know that it's going to run forward. So what did you do organizationally? And then the second thing is, when you're looking at your core demographics and you say that the market was too small, how do you develop that market? How do you then say, okay, I know there's people who love rock and roll and they might love Metallica, but do they love Megadeth, right? Or do they love, you know, Iron Maiden, and do they love Bette Davis? Because that can arguably is rock and roll, quite frankly, and it's my funky rock and roll anyway. But yeah, so how do you deal with not just the core but the periphery? So I guess two questions are: how do you reorganize yourself in order to think in that mindset? There's one thing, and then how do you organize yourself not just to say the core, but there's other people that are there that would be interesting and entice them, fish them in.
Shall I start with the organizational one? Because I was involved at the heart of that. Arguably, the issue that we had was our startup went from having four members of staff, well, really two, because only the chief exec and I were really full-time on it until the day it started up. And the day it started up, it went from having two members of staff to about 100, something like that. Because it started up with an acquisition of a publishing business, onto which we immediately molted the radio station onto the publishing business. It became a stable mate. So we added a radio station onto it. And what we didn't kind of really realize is we also added on an events business as well. And then within 12 months, we added on a gaming business as well. And I think the real challenge was that while we were really, really tight organizationally going into this, as soon as it started working in the real world, the magazine business had been operating for decades and was actually very highly regarded and full of very powerful people who kind of saw our vision, but interpreted it the same way. And then we brought in Moose to lead the radio business, and Moose had a vision based on what he had been told of how that should be. And the gaming guys came in, and the issue was there was no real coordinating point. And if I'm really honest, and I put my hand up as part of this, the absolute leadership at the very pinnacle wasn't strong enough to corral everybody into one room.
So then, Moose, how did you become better than Alan?
I'm not better than Alan. I'm just different. And I have very specific skills, and he has very specific skills.
So how did you kind of increase your base?
Well, when we started, we started with nothing. So you think of the two examples. You've just talked about Team Rock and their acquisition of an established and successful, I don't know if... revenue generating business, I could call it, I guess. So there was all sorts of history and there's all sorts of legacy that you deal with. We started with nothing. So we started and there's a group of us and we said, okay, this thing that we think can work, we're part of this audience, we're part of this community. Okay, what do we need? What do we need to get this done, to start? And this is what we want. What do we need? We need tech. Obviously.
So we want to
be the greatest rock and metal radio station in the world. That's what we want to be. And we want to serve our community and nobody else. That's it. We don't want to work for advertisers. We don't want to work for banks. We don't want to work for VCs. We want to work for our community. And we know the community and trying to put that commercial, everything's all fine and dandy in the government regulated world of Ofcom is very difficult to present a station that is reflective of a rock festival can't do that on the air. So anyway, just understand our audience and be loyal to them and to them only, and serve them. That's the point. What do we need to do that? And with technology, the way it has advanced, we could see back when we started Team Rock, we could see 5G was going to just revolutionize the way that content can be served up and produced. And you don't need the bricks and mortar. You don't need all these things. So we didn't need a great deal of money. We needed people.
There's a little story of somebody who broadcast a breakfast show from the London Underground.
Yes. That was it. That was, so we broadcast a live radio show from the Underground, London Underground. And we did that using Wi-Fi. And now that's just commonplace. But when we did that, everybody went, what?
How do you get to that, right? So again, how does that serve your audience? Like, well, what were all the different things you were doing to serve your audience?
Well, it's the music first and foremost, and not playing ads is our USP. We can play songs and artists that nobody else does because the commercial radio will not go after them because they're not big enough, and not enough people follow them and listen to them in order to get the audience they need to make their ads worth something. It's a very, very simple, model. But I tell you, the other thing is being honest, good or bad, about everything, being utterly transparent. And we know that this rock and metal, we describe it as a community, and it really is a community. And if you want to create a community, you have to include the community. You have to make them feel part. They have to be part of what you're doing. It's not just an us and them. We shall be prepared and we will serve it to you. It's not that relationship. The community has to be part of it. So
what feedback do you get from the community?
Oh my God. Endless. They're not shy in coming forward. You know, and we're very transparent. And I guess because of what we do, you know, the three of the four main directors are public facing, you know, where we do a show every day, and where we're available. We do, you know, we're live on Twitch, or, you know, across our video channels. We're live on air. We take, you know, and we have constant feedback from the audience, unsolicited or solicited. We research.
How do you take that in? How do you absorb it?
Well, we actually have two or three groups that we have created from the community who, you know, we have sort of, like, for example, we've just set up like an equality commission to make sure that what we're doing is actually, because we have a very, very narrow lens that we look through. The directors say, okay, well, you know, are we actually being inclusive? Are we? So we hive off the responsibility to the community. We ask the community. We do a weekly podcast, and we do on air. Say, look, you know, we're thinking about doing this. We need help. Who wants to stick their hand up? And so we have an impressive volunteer force. And if you're actually looking at people who contribute regularly to Primordial Radio, we have about 26 every, you know, that contribute and do things on a weekly basis, of which 4 are paid.
So how do you measure your own success? So from an entrepreneur perspective, right? People who listen and go, oh man, this sounds really great. But then how do you measure your success? What, or do you measure success? Is it worthwhile measuring success? Is it relevant to you?
Oh my God, yes, absolutely. Success would be growth in numbers. So members of the community grow. And that what we thought that, you know, from based upon all of our experience and our research that we'd been through the past 10 years, the anecdotal evidence, we said, you know what, if we created this thing and we can get the message through, people will come and people will like it. Not everybody will like it, but they will admire the idea because of how the origins of the story, and indeed the actual ongoing story, is compelling. And it is something that is unique in the UK in terms of rock and metal. And there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it out there right now.
So Alan, I know that you're dying to ask a question, but I've still got a couple, right? So yeah, when you first started out, obviously the first ethos that you guys had was to play rock and roll, right?
Yeah.
To play to an audience. So how long have you guys been going?
We started actually making noise, or when we started the idea?
When you started actually making noise.
When we started making noise, I think we started doing kind of test transmissions in July of 2017.
Right. So let's say 2.5 years.
We officially launched the station and got all our tech and everything, bits and parts, in the end of September to 2017.
Right. So from that day to where you are now, how is your philosophy changing? Day one was to, you know, get good music out to the people that love rock and roll, right? Mm-hmm. So in the couple of years it's been there since, have you changed? Obviously, you want to become more inclusive, but has a philosophy changed? Is it just about the music now? Is it about, because now the community is gathering pace and you're involving more of the community. What more can you do with that community? Like, what is that?
It's not, and it's not just about the music. That is kind of our point, was that because, you know, if you wanted just music, you'd go to Spotify and you would put it on shuffle. You know, this Zoom call that we're recording this podcast on, you know, okay, Zoom, the technology can do that, but nothing beats a meeting in the pub face-to-face, sure, shaking a hand. That's the difference. So there's the difference between a Zoom call and a face-to-face meeting. That's the difference between Spotify and radio. And so we are radio. We are personality. We have personality galore. We have opinions and we argue, we fight, we sing, we laugh, we cry. Spotify doesn't do that, obviously. You know, it's just an algorithm that just looks at your behavior and goes, okay, tell you what. Whereas you are, it is an opportunity and platform to discover, to educate, to entertain. And it's a living, breathing community that is presented through this channel. That's what it is. And
all right,
so for example, if you go to Download, which is the biggest rock and metal festival in the UK, there's 100,000 people there on the weekend. And you just look at that and say, look, we don't need millions of people to make this work. We need thousands. And then if that continues to grow, and the idea was just to make it sustainable and to make it profitable, which we are not yet, but we're on the cusp. And then it can stay here and serve this community, and it'll be here as a tool for the community, and that's what it is. That's the only reason why we did it.
All right, so yeah. I'm gonna show my age, and again, sorry, Alan, I'm probably I know you probably want to ask lots of questions, but I'm fascinated by this, right? So I'm gonna show my age by this. So when I was growing up, and I used to work at my dad's news agents, right? We only had medium wave radio, so all I used to listen to was Tony Blackburn. Yeah. And you know, and that was it. And I don't think now that you have the power of a DJ as you did maybe 30, 40 years ago, right? So when you listen to, I know it sounds to people like it's great, corny, whatever it is, whether it's Giles Peterson or whether it's someone like Tony Blackburn or whatever is that, or John Peel, right? That was there back in the 60s and 70s. The ability to discover new music and listen to what was there that. You know, there was a kind of a show that you would go to and listen to and knew that if you listened to that show, it was for me when you were Soul to Soul, Jazzy B, right? So Jazzy B would just suddenly play amazing, just mind-blowing soul R&B. And you knew that if I listened to his radio station for an hour, I would have an education.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is that what you're trying to do? And do you think that's, how do you see the modern state of radio in that perspective? Because we grew up and we are old now. Everyone is like Instagram playing music. Now's YouTube radio. Like, how do you compete with all that?
Well, we have a very clearly defined patch. You know, and people often say, well, why are you doing that? You're going on the internet with millions of other stations. Well, then if using that logic, no other restaurant would ever open. Yeah. You know, I mean, so you have to have belief in what you're doing. And so, yes, there are other rock and metal services out there online. There are, and we just have to concern ourselves on us. So yeah, how do we compete against that? We make better cake.
But you remember that I guess my main point was around those DJs, right? Yep. Those people who helped you discover something that you never, ever discovered before. And is that part of the ethos?
Oh, absolutely. You know what? If you listen to us, and of course I'm incredibly biased, but if you listen to us, yes, 80% of what you hear is Pete Bailey, who is an absolute wizard with the music, and so he will create logs, and about 80% of that is already set, and so you have about 20% to play with, so that you can insert your own songs, and so the every personality has their own, well, every show has its own personality and its own flavor and its own sound, to a degree. And that's, if you listen to radio and how radio works now, the way it is networked, and there are only a few networks, I think there's really only three networks, maybe even two now in commercial radio in the UK, it's homogenous. Insert DJ here, same music, same DJ. And so, you know, there's not much difference at all. If you listen to us, we're very, very different and incredibly different individuals.
But how?
We don't actually format them to hell. You know what I mean? So in radio, it's like, okay, honestly, man, the last station, the last commercial station that I work for, there would be a on the screen, insert content here. You know, do liner here. And it was so predictable. It was so boring. It had no life. It had no opinion. It was just sterile and boring and predictable. We're not that. We're not that. And we allow people to be who they are. And you know, if it means that you have to go on a 5-minute tirade saying fuckity, fuckity, fuck, then that's what it is. Or if it's, hey, you know, I'm really struggling with my mental health. Or holy Christ, there's a new breakfast cereal out there. Man, the tickets for the concert are on there. I mean, it's about life. It's, you know, yes, music draws us together, but inside there. And what really compelled us is this community is utterly dismissed. And within it, we know, I could show you our profile and I'll put it up against Classic FM and I'll put it up against Radio 2. And yes, okay, we're male heavy. This is fairly indicative of rock. But in terms of our education, our socioeconomic, you know, all that bullshit, we're the same profile as Classic FM. And, you know, but people think, oh my God, these drongos in the field going metal. Yeah, well, you stereotype us at your peril.
But that's an interesting
one. Can I just interject for a minute there? Because Chris, you just expressed a passion there that it's so unusual about your business's desire to serve its audience well and not to worry about trying to do something that is big, but do something that is great. And great,
you know, Alan, do you know what the difference is? Is I spent 10 years trying to convince others that we are worth it, as opposed to just looking and going, hey, fuck, we're worth it. Fuck, we don't need anybody else's endorsement or opinion. We don't need them.
But why do people think you're not worth it? That's
why. Well, because basically, we're worth it for your advertising dollar. Mercedes, will you please advertise, or Harley Davidson? No, I wouldn't try. I wouldn't put my brand next to that. You wouldn't put your brand next to rock? What? Your Mercedes. Oh, no. I listen to rock, but this is the owner of the Mercedes dealership we were dealing with. Oh, I listen to the station. I love the music. But I'm not going to put my brand next to it. Well, you listen to it. So, but because the stereotype is long hair, tattooed rockers. And yes, we have long hair. And well, I mean, look at me. You wouldn't peg me as a rocker, because we're not. The stereotype is what drives everybody away. And so I spent a decade of my life.
That's like a 1950s stereotype, right?
Well, I mean, Christ almighty, they still carry on. I mean, nothing has happened to it. It's still there.
I entered this world of rock and metal, particularly in the metal world, completely with my eyes tight shut. I was going to say wide open, tight shut, because I had every preconceived idea. I'd done enough around rock in the past that I kind of felt I had a good idea what they were like. Oh my God, I have never met a more inclusive, involving, open, friendly, and educated audience in all my life.
You know what? I mean, I think it's one of those ones where I'll tell you one thing, right? My first introduction to rock and roll was Betty Davis, If I'm in Luck, I'll Get Fucked Up, right? I'll Get Fucked Up, or whatever it was. My friend from Norway had 1 terabyte's worth of vinyl music, like wall-to-wall vinyl. And so he literally sat me down for 3 years and played me everything that was important in rock to listen to, right? And so then I understood, okay, now I understand exactly what this is. Because I was, you know, I was hip-hop and R&B and a bit of house and this, that, and the other. And then once you're there, you understand, right? Yeah. You understand, you can convert, and that's it, you're done. You know, then I was at the AC/DC concerts, you know, but you realize that everyone who's there is there for a passion, which is the music, and they don't really give a shit about who you are and what you do and what you know, what job you have. And as long as you're there loving the music, you can wear what you want. It's not like, you know, back in the days where if you're a hip hop concert or you're a house concert, you have to wear a certain thing in order to get in. Rock and roll, you can rock up in shorts, a suit. It doesn't, no one gives a shit, right?
You know, what's really interesting is that a significant portion of our audience are socially awkward, and dudes, they're men who go to gigs on their own. And you know, they don't socialize very well. And I would imagine that I don't know what expressed as a percentage, how different we, because I still believe we're just a cross section of society. That's all we are. We just have a particular interest. So I don't know if we're in a higher or lower, but there is quite a socially awkward awkwardness about members of our community. But the thing that I think you want to know what success is that they wear the primordial t-shirts with pride. We sell our merchandise, and radio stations don't sell t-shirts. They give them away at promo events. No, we sell ours. People buy them, put them on their back to show off. And when they see each other, they may have never met each other. They see each other in a field at a gig. They go, "Hey man, how are you?" And they've got a friend, and they go, "Hey man." And they're together. And that is a common theme. And to me, that is success, bringing these people together. Because we use the analogy of the only rocker in the village. You know, there's always one. Every bus you're in, every restaurant you're in, there's one at least. But you just can't see them. You know, they're walking amongst us. And, you know, it's connecting these people. And the digital opportunity allows us to do that. And the irony is we've created a physical community off the back of it. Because the whole thing is digital. And then it's like, oh, this physical community that has now, that has grown organically is a thing of beauty. That is success.
But is it a typical British thing though? Because I mean, sorry to interrupt, Alan. Because like, when I'm here on the continent, right? Mm. I mean, come on, rock and roll is here in most of continental Europe. Okay, let's not talk about the Scorpions and Zucchero and that. But you know what I mean? It's like it's inbred in the continental psyche of Europe.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But it may be in the UK has become a little bit. Is it a difference between the UK and Europe?
And there's the other failing of Team Rock. They said, we're going to be the global home of rock and metal. The difference, I can stand on the White Cliffs of Dover and I can see France. The difference between the UK and France is immense. And to make the arrogant assumption that all rock bands from all over are exactly the same is basically stereotyping the community that you were so railing against the stereotype. Don't.
What is the difference?
They're individuals. And they all, as you talk, okay, we're together. We're together as a community. And we're all here for the music. Yeah, but you know, I'm loving Five Finger Death Punch, but me, I'm more of a Def Leppard guy. You know what I mean? And so we ask our audience to tolerate quite a bit of music that they never heard, that they would probably never, ever cross the street to listen to. We ask them, says, look, you're probably going to hear a lot of stuff on here that would make you go, ah! But you're right. Once you contemplate it and understand it and listen to it and see the variance, and the broad spectrum of rock.
Partner introduced me to Meshuggah, for God's sake.
Meshuggah, there we go, baby. We play Meshuggah. And so, like, you would never, ever, ever go see Meshuggah. I would never. Until Team Rock and now us, particularly us, 50% of what we play is new. We embrace, you know, up and coming. We want to make sure that this genre survives and lasts. So, you know, it'll be here when we're gone. And so, you know, there's all sorts of stuff that we're introduced to that I would never, if it was just me sitting back, I would never hear all of it. Do you know what I mean? I would. It's crazy.
Do you consider yourself to be an entrepreneur?
No, that's the thing. I always laugh when I was just telling my wife, I was telling Joe, I said, oh, I'm going on to this entrepreneurial podcast, but I don't know what the entrepreneurial playbook. It's not like I thought I'm going to start my own business and I'm going to do this. It was very led by the idea, not because I wanted to run my own business. It was the idea and the passion behind it and the determination and I guess frustration and anger ultimately of people dismissing it.
See, that's interesting because, you know, I think there's absolute truth in an entrepreneur doesn't fit one particular description. And there's a broad, broad, broad group here. From at one end, it's like this, and the other end, it's like that. Because if you read a lot in the books, it will tell you that actually what you should do is go and analyze and develop and interrogate market sectors and business opportunities and almost have like a scientific approach to entrepreneurialism. It's almost like trying to track a formula. And what you describe about the business you have is there was a formula and that formula didn't work. So we've thrown that entirely out and maybe arguably you do have a formula, but at the other extreme it is, what I'm going to do is go and create something I believe in. And if I do this well, I believe others will follow. Would that be fair?
It's fair, absolutely. But the only reason I had that belief is because I could see it. I could see it, and I spoke, you know, for 10 years in the UK. You know, I go to festivals. I would work at Team Rock. I would see the people who would say, "Gosh, you know, wouldn't it be great if we had this thing?"
And so the heart of an absolute definition of an entrepreneur, which is somebody that sees an opportunity and grabs and levers that opportunity to create a business.
I guess so, but I guess what do you want to get from it? Would maybe be the differing of opinion. What motivated you to start? Okay, I see an opportunity to make money. I see an opportunity.
No, but no entrepreneurs are in it just to maximize their personal wealth. Loads of entrepreneurs are in it to do something great.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's one thing.
Which leads me on to a question around where the balance sits between what you want to create and what the business needs to do. And how does a purpose-driven organization like Primordial balance those two drivers? This is what we want to do, but this might be what we have to do.
Well, I think that I always use the analogy that when the space shuttle used to fly, it was off course over 90% of the time. So we would watch it, you know, take off, and then magically a week later it'd show up on a strip of, you know, desert somewhere in California. That was easy. Holy shit. No, it's not. There is teams of the most intelligent human beings ever constantly assessing it. And okay, just making little, and okay, the goal was to get it off the ground, up and down. And that was the goal. But all these teams and all these people had very specific skills and they worked on it. You look at F1 pit crews. I'm sorry, I'm probably not answering your question. F1 pit crews, I admire because they have one job. They have one job and one job only. Your job is to remove this nut. That's it. That's all you do. Your whole purpose here is to remove that nut as quickly as you possibly can. Don't worry about the guy who's putting the person who's putting the petrol in or doing whatever. You do that and that's it.
And you'll train like a marathon runner to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And you train 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 and you do it again and 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 again. And then all of a sudden, wow, they did that pit stop in 2.3 seconds. Well, how did that happen? It didn't just happen. There's a whole bunch of people putting a whole bunch of effort into that moment that you don't see and you don't understand. And when you're very wide-eyed and idealistic, you don't see that. But you have to have that wide-eyed idealism in order to get to that point. Because if you actually looked at the minutiae of everything that was involved to change that nut, you go, fuck that. That's too much effort. If you ever really understood it fully, I don't think anybody would start anything. They just believe in something. And then the idea and the belief is first, and then everything else can follow.
You might have just, I'm just really aware that time is running out on us for this.
We can keep going for a very long time.
I think... if you're up for it, we may well invite you back again for another chat with us.
But Alan, before you close off, I have one last question to ask, and I know it's going to take another.
And I would like to answer Alan's question actually.
Go for it. When you're firstly,
may I answer Alan's question? Saying, you know, how do you do that? How do you make sure that the original vision is still on course? The thing I learned the most up to the point where we started this was. Don't get in your own way and let people find people who can do it and let them do it. Let them do it. Because I have a very definite opinion as to how things should be done on music, on promotion, on marketing. But I don't really know music, promotion, and marketing. So what I think, this is the way I know what I want to happen overall, the goal. I understand that. But it's the component parts to help you get there and resist the temptation. As an entrepreneur, you're probably an alpha female or alpha dog, whatever they call it. You know, you have a very, very definite view. This is how this should work. Resist that temptation as much as you can. Let people grow. And honestly, your job will be the easiest job in the world because your questions will be answered for you.
That's fabulous because you've answered what was going to be my last question to you, which is what is the one thing that you would share with any aspiring or early stage entrepreneur.
Check your ego, man.
I'll leave it over to Barab to ask the final question for the day.
So if there's one thing that you wanted to start, of course, you've been fundraising and you've been, you know, you've got a vision for the business, obviously, and you're there. But when you started, there was like a core belief, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was there. Have you achieved that core belief yet? Or is it still ongoing?
Well, the belief remains constant. And if it were to erode and disappear, then the whole thing would go. So the belief remains the same. So is it a question of have we arrived? No.
Mm,
not even close. Not even close. You know what we've done is very publicly and awkwardly we've built on the fly for the first 3 years we've built, and we were very open about it to the people that were here saying, right, okay, we're still getting our systems in place, because you know we've been very, very, very frugal. And we've been running this as almost like a volunteer organization up to this point. Now I think it's the time we have a product. And you know what it is? We've proven that it can work. That was the thing. It would never work.
All the listeners that are listening now, if there's one thing that you can ask them for to help you on your mission, what would that be?
Try it before you make up your mind.
How do we try it? How do we find you?
Primordial Radio. Just search it. We're on the internet, you know.
that thing.
Yeah.
I've heard about that.
Primordial Radio. And you know, just and before you actually, you know what? What I would like is I would love for you to sit down. I'd like you to make a list of what you think we are like, we as people, as metalheads, and then spend time with us and then check that list, you know, after the fact and go, "Well, wait a minute. I wonder how close you'd be." I'd be very interested. That would be a great exercise, actually. What do you think is going to happen? What do you think this place is like? And then take the three, you can come and have 3 months free. I mean, full access, whatever. And then at the end of that 3 months, you then go, "Oh, okay. I actually it was nothing like I thought I was going to be." Good or bad. Be interesting to know.
You need to come to India, my friend. India, and watch the Rock in India is there.
Oh my God. But I tell you what. But the UK first, we have to get this right. But man, India is just like,
it's huge.
But it's like, it's sitting there going, "Hey, look at me. I'm an opportunity." It's like, if we don't move now, somebody's going to do it. And all of us who've been at it for such a long time go, "Fuck."
There's a billion children practicing.
Well, there's one thing I can share at the end of it, Moose, the Indian opportunity sat there 8 years ago. And we said, if we don't move now, we're going to mess up with Team Rock. 8 years down the line, it's still there.
Well, so, at some point in time, that won't be true.
It's a very, very big opportunity. Moose, yeah. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the New World Entrepreneurship Podcast. That's all from me, Alan.
That's all for me.
And the wonderful Hugh Evans, or the inimitable Moose. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
See you next time.